This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Sergio Mora is here, the Latin Snake, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, and a guy that shares way too much information with me. Could you please not tell me everything about like your toiletry habits?
I'm surprised you have a clean bathroom in here, but yes, I carry wet wipes. I have dude wipes next to my toilet. I'm a clean man, Mannix.
To be clear, you have dude wipes next to your hotel toilet.
Yes, I do. So you come, it's meticulous. That's the word for you. I have a meticulous toilet and a fastidious restroom. Is that a word?
I don't know if it's the right word.
But you know what I meant. Dude wipes.
So fucking weird. I swear to God. We are here in Texas, Dallas, Texas, for the DAZN fight this weekend. A pretty strong card down in Texas, headlined by Mikey Garcia, making another attempt at winning a welterweight fight, this time against Jesse Vargas. Sergio, I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about the recently announced fight between Regis Progre and Maurice Hooker. That fight will be at 143 pounds in April. It's another terrific fight that I want to get to as well. As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. But first, Sergio, we got to look back, man. We got to look back at a terrific weekend in Las Vegas. And one of the bigger, I don't want to call it an upset because it was projected to be a close fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. The odds weren't wide in either direction. But if you had asked anyone out there how they thought this fight was going to go, I don't think too many people would have said that Tyson Fury overwhelms Deontay Wilder physically, takes the fight to him, and forces Wilder's corner to throw in the towel after the seventh round. Let's start with Tyson Fury's performance. What did you think of the way Fury fought against Wilder?
First of all, no way, no one expected that. I believe Deontay Wilder was the favorite, the favorite to win that fight, right?
I believe ever so slight favorite,
but a favorite to win the fight. Tyson Fury, they're both undefeated. Tyson Fury, lineal champion. But what he did was special. He outboxed him the first fight. Everyone knew that. In the second fight, he said he was going to outfight him. Usually when you have a boxer that moves around like Tyson Fury, that uses his angles, he's not the biggest puncher, but he has respectable power. I mean, we all knew who the puncher here was, and it's Wilder. But man, I mean, Fury, he walked the walk, talked the talk, and he punched the punch, and he took the fight out of Wilder, man. And the way he did it, I mean, he made him pretty much, they stopped the fight, and there's a lot of controversy. I'm sure you're going to want to touch into that. But he made him submit somehow, some way. You don't need to have a towel thrown in. You don't need the referee or the doctor to stop it. Sometimes when a fighter's getting beaten and there's no answer for it, you're submitting little by little. There's no answer. You're not winning rounds. Wilder wasn't winning rounds. I mean, he didn't do anything to prove that he can change the fight around with one punch, even though he can do it because he did in the first fight, and that's why he's so upset. But no, man, Fury outboxed him, outfought him. Personally, I don't need to see a third fight.
Look, the craziness, though, is that Tyson Fury was telling anyone that would listen, this is how I'm going to fight. And I don't think anyone really believed him. I thought they'd see
I didn't
more.
Believe him.
I didn't really believe him either because there really hasn't been anyone that's taken the fight to Deontay Wilder like that in his career. I mean, Luis Ortiz, in the last fight out, fought a tactical fight. It was a successful strategy up until when he got knocked out, but I thought that was the tack that Tyson Fury was going to take. But he clearly, after going 12 rounds with Deontay Wilder, knew that he could take his power to a certain degree. Yes, he did get knocked down a couple of times. And he knew that the best strategy was throwing a bunch of punches and backing him up. I know that Wilder had said coming into the fight that Tyson Fury has pillow hands, but he couldn't have believed that because Fury hurt him a couple of times in that first fight. That wasn't a case of Wilder, you know, just dealing with a pity patter type of guy. He knew the kind of pop that a 6'9", 273-pound man had, and I give Fury credit. Look, it was controversial to move away from Ben Davison, his trainer that got him back from the depths of humanity, to get back in the ring, two wins, and then you fight Deontay Wilder. But going to Sugar Hill, training in that Kronk style, I think that had a benefit. You and I argue all the time about...
I was about to touch on that.
Changing
trainers.
I
don't agree. You know? This is the first time I'm going to agree with you, Mannix. That trainer change was a revelation, if that's the word. Because I saw something in Fury I didn't think he had. He outfought the puncher, and we all knew that Deontay Wilder has been outboxed before. Fury, that's all I thought he had. No way did I think he was going to knock out and make Wilder pretty much... I hate using the word submit because he wanted to continue. But he beat the fight out of him. And to me, that's a form of submission. And he was looking around for help. He said he was blaming everyone but himself. But he just didn't have the fight in him. There was no fight in his eye in the corner. I always look at the corner, how he's reacting with his trainer. There was no fight in him. There's no instruction. It was a little bit of everything that went wrong for Wilder, but everything went right for Fury. I mean, the man, I said this afterwards, from what he fought, depravity, how you so eloquently put it, he came back from all that to become the champion, knock off the number one heavyweight, the baddest man in the planet, and knock him out the way he did. That right there, that's what legends are made of, man. That, and this man became a legend, not only because of his story and everything he had to conquer, but holy shit, the way he did it, going up in weight the way he did. I mean, he has a future outside of boxing, whether it's motivational speaker, whether it's an actor, but right now he's a heavyweight champion of the world.
All right, let's talk about some of the controversies that were part of the fight and the aftermath of the fight. And the first and most significant is Mark Breland's decision to throw in the towel in that seventh round. Breland is the assistant trainer in Wilder's corner. Jay Deese, the head trainer, has explained to me before and did it again after the fight that they run things kind of differently in Team Wilder, whereas it's more like an NFL team where Deese is the head coach, Breland is the offensive coordinator, effectively saying that Breland has more power than most assistant trainers do. But Sergio, you're a fighter. I don't know any assistant trainer that has the power to do something like that and throw in the towel. That's what made that decision shocking. So let's start here. The decision to throw in the towel by Mark Breland. What did you think of it at the time, and what do you think now?
I thought it was the right call, and I'm speaking for the fighter. I'm speaking for the fighter and Mark Breland, because JD, if that's his name, because I haven't even studied him, I don't know who he is. I don't know what champions he's fought. I mean,
well,
he's
the guy
before.
He got Wilder from the very beginning and built him into a world champion.
Okay, so he's one for one with Wilder. Good for him, but he doesn't have a resume. He's like, for instance, my coach, John Montelongo. I've had him my entire career, but he doesn't know boxing. I have my boxing trainer, Dean Campos. So that's what I think happened here. I respect them both equally. So if one wants to fight to stop the fight, you got to appreciate that. Mark Breland, he's an Olympic gold medalist, one of the greatest amateur fighters in history, a two-time professional champion. What has JD's done? How does he know what it feels like to be fighting another man, a professional fighter, to have that pain, to know that there's no winning in this fight? There's resignation, there's submission, all these other things. A fighter could see it in another fighter's eyes when he's lost, when there's no answer for that. What the fuck does JD's know inside the ring? He knows his man outside the ring, but what does he know inside the ring? Those were punishing punches. And not only that, you start thinking as a fighter, as a retired fighter, now a coach like the assistant trainer Mark Breland, you start thinking about the future, what past boxing, the family man. I mean, there's so many tragedies that have happened in the last 2 years. You know, 5-6 fighters have died. One of them under our watch, and it's just when stuff like that happens, it's like, oh, I wish I would have stopped it. Earlier. Look, Wilder wasn't taking a humongous beating, but he was starting to get beaten down, and he wasn't in the fight. Mark Breland saw that. I think he made the right call. All respect to Deese for bringing up a world champion like that, but he doesn't know what Mark Breland does. You can ask any professional fighter, especially one in the championship level, if Mark Breland make the right choice, it will be 100% unanimous, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at what Mark Breland was seeing at that point of the fight. I remember tweeting this at the time in the sixth round. I'm watching Wilder, and he's moving around the ring, and every time he got close to the ropes, he put his arm up on the ropes to basically prop him up. That told me he was completely out of gas.
That's bad body language for a fighter. Anytime you start boxing, when your arms are up like that, you'll see the trainer slap the hands down. That's a sign of, and I keep saying it, that's a sign of submission. That's a sign of, I'm tired, my legs are done, I don't want to fight, I need a break. negative, negative, negative. All right, so you don't want to do that. That's why the reason the trainers always push the elbows down. Like, no, look like you want to fight. Have the body language. Don't show resignation. Show the referee that you want to continue fighting. It's body language. Deontay didn't have that. But you know who did have it? Mark Breland, for noticing it.
Yeah, and look, I was ringside, so I couldn't see or hear what was happening in the corners. But I remember after that sixth round, seeing what I saw in the sixth round, looking up at the big screen, and just seeing the kind of engagement between Wilder and Deese and Breland. Wilder had his head down. He wasn't really interacting with either one of them. That told me that he was on the cusp of being done. And then I'm assuming, because Breland hasn't really talked about this yet, but I'm assuming Breland saw that big right hand come in from Fury, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back there. And look, we both know Deontay Wilder can't win a decision against Tyson Fury. And at that point in the seventh round, I think we had a pretty clear idea that Wilder didn't have the power anymore to land that big shot against Tyson Fury. So if you're Mark Breland, you're sitting there going, all right, well, my guy can't knock this guy out. He may be able to hang in there for three, four more rounds, but what kind of punishment?
Cost?
Yeah, what kind of punishment is he going to take in between?
See, the beautiful thing about a puncher is they can end fights with one punch. Absolutely. Everyone likes to see a power punch. But you know what they suck at doing? Surviving. You know, they don't know how to survive because they're not used to being on the other side of the power. They're not used to being hurt. They don't know how to hold down. They don't know how to kill rounds. They don't know how to move around the ring. George Foreman, Deontay Wilder, name puncher after puncher. They don't know how to survive when they're hurt because they're not accustomed to being hurt. And a fighter like Mark Breland, who may not have been a power puncher like that, but he's been around power punchers. I mean, he was in the Olympic team with great heavyweights. So he knows what it's like. These guys don't know how to survive, these punchers. Deontay Wilder was going to be lost. Not only that, he didn't have the amateur pedigree that that Mark Breland had. So even worse, he wasn't going to be able to survive. But credit to the Bronze Bomber. Look, a fighter wants to die in the ring. And believe me, I believe him when he says that. Believe me, Wilder's the type of fighter that wants, he don't throw the towel in. I'm going to go all the way to the end, and I believe him. But it's not up to him anymore. You have a corner for a reason. You have the people that look out for you, because that type of personality, that type of heavyweight mentality, that's what you need to become a champion, but that's also what gets you hurt.
It gets you hurt and maybe worse at some point.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was sitting there ringside in the D.C. area when Maxim Dadashev, you know, went 11 rounds in his fight. And to this day, you know, Buddy McGirt will think about what would have happened if I had stopped that fight a little bit earlier. So err on the side of caution and live to potentially fight another day. That's what I think Breland did. And Deontay Wilder, as furious as he is right now, or at least what he's saying, he should thank Mark Breland for that. Breland saved him from a beating that would have kept coming.
Saved them from a beating and just made them another big payday, because by people not seeing Deontay Wilder crumble like we thought it was going to happen, or get beaten up, or maybe even, you know, get knocked out, because he got stopped, but he didn't get knocked out. That actually, you know, can maybe create a third fight, or it saves his reputation as a puncher.
All right, look, let's talk about that third fight. But I guess before we get to the third fight, you know, when Anthony Joshua lost, one thing I respected about Joshua is that he really didn't make any excuses. There were some reports out there about a panic attack in the locker room, and, you know, we wondered about, you know, the change in atmosphere fighting at the U.S. for the first time, but Anthony Joshua didn't make any excuses. In the aftermath of the fight with Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder made a lot of excuses. He talked about the wardrobe he wore to the ring being too heavy. He talked about Breland and how Breland should have done that. He still felt he had a chance to win the fight. He talked about the referee, Kenny Bayless, and blamed him for some of the stuff that he thought Tyson Fury was getting away with. I heard it during one interview, the name Anthony Durrell was brought up, and yeah, Anthony Durrell yelling from the stand saying, stop the fight, that maybe that influenced all this. I mean, I'll tell you, Sergio, I was disappointed that Wilder went that road. I think, look, he did in all these interviews say that Tyson Fury was the better man. He said after the fight, Tyson Fury was the better man. But just leave it at that. I mean, don't bring up any of this other stuff, because that just feels from the outside like excuse making.
Absolutely. Big man, big excuses. And that shows a side of character in a fighter. And, you know, as a fighter, we judge what they do inside the ring. But what they do outside the ring, it kind of reflects on the fighter that they are as a man. I mean, so that just shows you he's going to bring up excuses once he finally takes his first loss. And you really show the personality and the temperament of a man in the loss. You know, that's when you really discover what you have. Can he pick himself up? Like, for instance, we just left the fighter meeting right now. And one of the first things we asked Chocolatito, who's one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters in our era, hey, so what did you do after getting knocked out? And he just simple. He said, I got up and kept fighting. No excuses. He didn't say, oh, I wasn't a 115 pounder. I was coming up in weight. My gloves. He made no excuses. Dust yourself up. Keep fighting. That's it. And that makes you want to see him. It makes you want to root for him. It, you know, and whenever you get the heavyweight champion of the world make excuse after excuse from the wardrobe and everything you just mentioned, it waters down all everything that you praised about him. And it's just not a good look, man. It really is not a good look. Fighters are meant to lose and to win and regain championships. That's what made fighters like Muhammad Ali special and Sugar Ray Leonard special and Roberto Duran. Just when people thought they were out, they have one more great fight in them. And that's why people get enamored with boxing, because it gets reflected to a normal person, a normal man. We all get our asses kicked. Get your ass up and keep fighting.
So Wilder says that there's going to be a third fight between them. He's got about 3 weeks now to exercise that clause formally, but it seems like that's the direction that he wants to go. What do you think of that? I mean,
I don't want to see it.
Well, contractually, it's supposed to happen by mid-July, but you know, Bob Arum has said, look, we can push it even further if we want to. Maybe they'll probably push it to September, October, because you can take advantage of ESPN and Fox having college football and NFL games and things like that to promote it. What do you think? I mean, if you're Deontay Wilder, I know you said you don't want to see it, but if you're Deontay Wilder, do you just have to take that fight?
No, well, first of all, let's think about it as a promotion and a network and pay-per-view. It didn't crack a million. They expected it to do more than a million, at least millions, according to promotion.
To break even, basically, they needed like 1.1 million.
There you go.
And they only did about 800,000 to 850,000.
And they didn't get near it. They didn't crack a million. So on a business standpoint, no, they shouldn't do it again. I mean, it was an amazing promotion. ESPN and Fox did an amazing job getting together, and it goes to show what boxing can be if people just get along. But that's another story. No, I don't want to see it again. The first fight, Fury outboxed him easily. If it wasn't for that big eraser that Wilder had, the fight would have been easily in Fury decision. Second fight, he got outfought. You saw Wilder pretty much not have an answer for getting outboxed or outfought. Why do we want to see a third fight? Not only did it not do the millions of pay-per-view buys that it do that people wanted, but as a boxer, I don't want to see it again. He got outboxed. He got outfought. Now what are you going to do? You're going to mix a little bit of both? You're going to become a float like a butterfly, sting like a bee all of a sudden? No, you're a big puncher. That's what he is. He's a big puncher. He's not going to all of a sudden bring in head movement and show you something different. He's not going to be able to do what you just said, Anthony Joshua, go from a puncher knocking out everybody to moving around the ring for 12 rounds. Wilder doesn't have that in his resume, in his repertoire. So no, I don't want to see a third fight.
No, and you're not going to be able to outbox Tyson Fury in the way that Anthony Joshua outboxed Andy Ruiz in that rematch, though. Along those lines, if he doesn't take this rematch and win in this rematch, I don't know what he is at this point. I mean, I've been talking to a bunch of different people. Like, I'm a Hall of Fame voter. I don't believe I could vote for Deontay Wilder for the Hall of Fame.
Of course not, but you know what he is? He's an Olympian, a bronze medalist, a heavyweight champion of the world, and a multi-millionaire.
Oh, he's got all those things, but I'm talking about if he wants his boxing career to continue, what would you want to see him do? Like, fall back into the PBC ranks and fight the winner of Adam Konoski or that fight with Robert Hellenius? Do you want to see him take on Andy Ruiz? I mean,
man,
there are no belts. There are no belts on the PBC side of the street right now.
That's going to be tough. I would like, you know what, people maybe fight Andy Ruiz. That's a PBC fighter. That's an Al Haymon fighter. And both have a lot of building up to do, and they both need each other. So a fight like that makes sense.
But you talked about the money, and look, he's probably going to make $25, $30 million in a rematch. He fights Andy Ruiz, is probably only five or six maybe.
And the flip side, of that coin is cash out, get the immediate rematch.
Well, look, that's the way he's clearly going to go. I mean, you can make an argument that Tyson Fury, those two have fought 19 rounds. You can argue Tyson Fury won 17 of them.
Yeah.
Like, outside of the two fights, two knockdowns in the first fight, 17 of the 19 rounds. And I just don't know.
To see a trilogy if with that fact right
I
there?
I wouldn't. Here's my thing. Like, if I in a perfect world, I would want to see a trilogy at some point, but I'd like to see some stuff happen.
Oh, at some point, yeah, because then you get people. You promote it. You get people thinking again. And they make their mouths water. Oh, well, look, Wilder just knocked out so and so and so and so.
Andy Ruiz,
and his
for
power
example.
Is back. And you know what? He learned from his mistakes. Then you start building it back up, but that's when promoting comes into play. So that, I mean, yes, I would want to see a trilogy, but not immediately. Look at what happened with the most trilogies. They don't happen back to back to back. I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran didn't do it until, you know, no one cared about it, but people still watch. People still remember it.
You know, we had this conversation when Joshua got knocked out, but if you're Deontay Wilder, what is your confidence level at right now? You didn't just lose. You got the crap kicked out of you. You got beat up in this fight in a lot of the same ways that Anthony Joshua got beat up. I mean, how big a factor is that, like getting your confidence back after losing in that way?
When you're a boxer, it's not a big deal because you know that you can come back. You know how to fix the mistakes. When you're a puncher, especially when it saved you so many times, you're lost. And believe me, that aura of invincibility is out the window, and we've seen it plenty of times before. The big case is Mike Tyson. Once that aura leaves, you're never gonna be the same because you made a reputation out of intimidation. You made a reputation out of power. Once a fighter like Tyson Fury, who's not known as a power puncher, and that's another thing. Most power punchers get beaten up by guys that aren't punchers, and I love that because I wasn't a puncher. But once those guys get are susceptible, they're never the same.
Yeah. And look, I don't think every fighter out there that Wilder faces could do what Tyson Fury did to him. I mean, Tyson Fury is the only fighter in boxing that Wilder has to look up to, you know, and has to punch up to, which is, you know, a bigger factor than people give credit. I mean, he's got to throw those punches vertically instead of just punching down on opponents like he has for so many times in his career. But I think that's, you know, the mental aspect of all this, I think, is going to be big to watch. Like, does he get back in the gym? Does he keep his trainer? Does he keep Breland around? Does he have that same level of confidence? Or is he shook? Because if you're Tyson Fury, you know, you do the exact same thing in the rematch. You go straight at him and force him to fight going backwards and beat him up a little bit until that power is taken away from him.
If Deontay Wilder had any kind of character, he would do the exact same thing Anthony Joshua did to regain the belt. Not fire anybody. Don't blame anybody. Shut the hell up. Get to the gym and just win your next fight. Win the rematch. That's how you shut people up. That's how you prove that the first fight was a fluke or whatever you want to call it. But you don't do it by blaming everybody, firing everybody, and expecting the results to be different. It's just not gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's, well, look, Anthony Joshua did add to his training staff,
but he didn't fire.
You're right, he didn't fire Robert
like Kraken. You wanted him to do.
I didn't say specifically
you said
fire.
Fuck loyalty, and I said loyalty
general,
is all they have
in general.
Loyalty is what got him to the Olympic gold medal and the unified heavyweight championship of the world, and you want him to throw that out for one fight? Fuck you, Mannix.
Is that not something that's happened countless times where fighters fired their trainers? I mean, should Manny Pacquiao have stayed with his original trainer and not gone to Freddie Roach, who helped catapult him to new heights? Should Vladimir Klitschko have stayed with original trainer?
There's exception to every rule, but
I just named two off the top of my head.
Well, there's an exception to every rule, but in the
plural
in
exceptions, then
in the what is it? I was going to say annals. In the annals of history. In the annals of history? Is that the word?
God.
You are such in the
an
annals
idiot.
Of history.
Annals.
Most annals.
The annals of
annals,
history.
Annals, annals. Okay.
Not the annals in the, of
in
history.
In the annals of history, boxers that leave their trainer, it doesn't end up right because they're the ones that made you and no one else knows you like your trainer.
All right. We're going to punctuate this conversation with that right there. Let's move on to the fight this weekend. Good fight. Good card here in Dallas, Texas. Mikey Garcia taking another crack at the welterweight limit, this time fighting Jesse Vargas. If you remember his fight last summer, he was completely blown out by Errol Spence. Not a lot of shame in that. I mean, Mikey moving up to 147 and immediately taking on arguably the number one guy at 147, but he decided to stay at welterweight. He's taking on another guy that, even though Jesse Vargas doesn't have the resume of an Errol Spence, he's been in with the best before. He's been a world champion before. This is a tough fight for Mikey Garcia.
Wait a minute. Jesse Vargas has a great resume. He just doesn't win. He doesn't win the big fights, but he has a great resume.
I said he's been in with all the great fights. He hasn't won them though. He draw with Broner.
I thought you said he doesn't have the resume of Errol Spence. I said absolutely he does.
I mean, Errol Spence has got a better resume
because he wins.
Because he wins. Yeah. Isn't that part of the whole? Yeah, he wins. So great.
I mean, but he gives everyone a. He hasn't been knocked out. He gives everyone a run for their money.
Yes.
I mean, the only people that have fought him are two Hall of Famers. Yes. You know, Tim Bradley and Manny Pacquiao. Broner, a four division champion. However you want to see that.
All right, but let's just go. Yeah. We both agree. Jesse Vargas is a very good fighter.
Yes.
But what do you think of the decision by Mikey to stay at welterweight and fight a guy like Vargas?
In Spanish, we call that terco, stubborn. And, you know, he's Mexican-American and he's, you know, grew up in Southern California. And, yeah, man, we have that temperament. We're stubborn. We want to prove that we can do it against all the criticism. Maybe not against the Errol Spences of the world, but against the Jesse Vargases of the world. Jesse Vargas has never been knocked out. He's a two-division world champion, and he's an excellent fighter. He gives everyone a run for the money, including great fighters like Manny Pacquiao and Tim Bradley. So if Mikey Garcia can convincingly beat a fighter like Vargas, or even knock out a fighter that's never been knocked out in Jesse Vargas, that's a statement. That's I'm back. And guess what? I did it at 147. I'm terco. I'm stubborn. I did it. Forget the criticism. I'm staying. I'm here to stay.
Yeah, look, Mikey Garcia, I think he'll be better this time around. He's got the experience of fighting at welterweight. He knows how to make the weight now and to just kind of prepare himself on fight night for a fighter that's going to be considerably bigger than him. And look, he's taking on a guy that is probably not going to be able to hurt him. Like, Jesse might be able to outbox him, but Jesse's not a huge puncher. I don't think there's as much danger in fighting Jesse Vargas as there was with Errol Spence. That's an easy thing to say there. I think it's a risk because what happens if Jesse outboxes him completely, which is possible. Like, Jesse's going to come into this fight at around 160 pounds, most likely. He is a big 147-pounder who's going to rehydrate well above, I think, the middleweight limit. What happens if Mikey loses badly in this fight? That, I think, would do some significant damage to his career. I mean, he could always go back down to 140 pounds and get significant fights. I think the winner of Prograis Hooker would love to fight Mikey Garcia.
He has too much pride for that. Mikey Garcia has too much fight. I think if he loses, and depending how he loses to Jesse Vargas, I think that would be, I'm saying this just bluntly, especially just leaving the fighter meeting right now with Mikey Garcia. He didn't want to become a fighter like he told us. You know, he was around
boxing. He's never had that passion.
He never had a passion to be a fighter. He wanted to be something else. He's a college graduate now. He has other ambitions now. He has money in his pocket now. He's not poor. So a loss to Jesse Vargas, I think, will be the end of a great Hall of Fame career in Mikey Garcia. Not because he can't continue doing it, because if in his mind, if he loses to a exceptional fighter, a two-division world champion like Jesse Vargas, and depending how he loses, for him, he's not good enough to beat the greats anymore, beat the people, the pound-for-pound fighters that he should be beating, and that's the kind of ambition that Mikey Garcia has, and that's why he's a great fighter. Great fighter. I'm not saying good or exceptional. Great fighter. And I think if he loses, we'll see the end of him.
So the end of him where?
I just don't think.
You think he's done if he loses?
I just don't. He didn't have the ambition to be a boxer when he was young. He said he was pushed into it. You just heard him in the fighter meeting.
I've written about Mikey a lot.
He was pushed into it. It seems like the passion is not there. He's just naturally gifted. And like we see in a lot of talented artists and writers, you wouldn't know, but they don't have the ambition. I mean, they're just naturally gifted. They do it because they're so good and people tell them they must do it. They're not pushed into it. It's like, okay, I can make a lot of money and people love the way I do and love what I'm doing. Let me continue doing it. But as soon as someone proves them wrong, and he's already been proven wrong in Spence, but he can blame it on being a welterweight. But if he does it with a non-puncher, like you say, Jesse Vargas, I think we'll see the end of him out of pride, not because anything else, just out of pride.
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe he kind of rebuilds and doesn't take on the winner of Prograis Hooker next. But
back-to-back losses with a proud fighter like that?
Yeah, he's a proud fighter, but he's still going to be in demand and can make a lot of money. And as long as he doesn't get knocked out, I don't think it's... I think you can write it off as saying, look, I bit off more than I could chew. I'm just not a welterweight. I am an elite 135-pounder. I am a very good 140-pounder. I'm just not a 147-pounder. We've seen it all the time, Sergio. Guys move up in weight and be like, well, you know what? That was a little bit too much. I'm going back down. I can see that scenario happen for Mikey Garcia.
Yeah, but they don't have the character of Mikey Garcia. And Mikey has this maturity this intelligence to him, this responsible fighter.
Let me give you an example, though. Like, this is
all character, Mannix. It's all character. I'm telling you right now, Mikey Garcia, you won't, if he loses, and depending if he loses bad to Jesse Vargas on Saturday, I think that'll be the end of maybe not his career, but for right now, you won't see him again. You won't
box. We just saw, though, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Jorge Linares, who went 140 pounds after losing to Lomachenko, lost badly, was smoked by Pablo Cesar Cano, knocked down three times in a first-round knockout, come back and pick up a huge knockout, and is now going to walk into a massive
matchup. See, this is why I hate debates with you, because you make good points sometimes. That's a great point right there, Linares.
Yes. So what's the counter-argument there? Like,
the counter-argument is that Mikey Garcia is... there's something different about him, and Linares has been knocked out several times, so he's
five
already
times.
Yeah, so he's already been down and out several times. He knows how to come back. Mikey Garcia, just two losses back to back to champions, multi-division champions. I think that'll be enough for him to say, man, you know what, if I can't be pound for pound great, I don't just want to be average. And you got to respect that.
I do respect that, but look, if there's motivation for Mikey Garcia, it's what might be awaiting him after this fight. If he can beat Jesse Vargas and prove that he's a top tier, or at least a medium tier welterweight, there's a good chance he gets the fight with Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if he can beat him decisively or even knock him out. Because then you could sell that, promote that, and say, hey, look, Manny Pacquiao, the great Manny Pacquiao, couldn't knock out Vargas. But look at Mikey Garcia.
And Eddie Hearn has been walking around this week in Texas saying that he can see that fight being made for the summer in Saudi Arabia. And look, part of Pacquiao's issues, from what I've been told, or desire to fight outside the country, is the tax stuff. I mean, you know, the U.S. taxes are significant. And you go to Saudi Arabia, you don't have to have anywhere near kind of a tax liability with something like that. So if Eddie Hearn can score the type of, you know, Saudi oil money that paid and lined the pockets of Anthony Joshua, I can certainly see that fight happening. Because on the PBC side, look, I don't know what Errol Spence is going to do. I don't know what's next for him. And if he does go into a big fight, I think it's more likely he fights Danny Garcia than fighting Manny Pacquiao, which leaves Pacquiao kind of looking around going, well, I already beat Keith Thurman. I don't really have a desire or a need to fight Sean Porter. I could have fought Terrence Crawford years ago, but I decided to do it then, so he's not going to do that now. They have wanted to fight Mikey Garcia for a while. Pacquiao actually showed up at the Errol Spence-Mikey Garcia fight, but people thought he was there to call out Errol after. He was there to scout Mikey Garcia. Everyone on his team was rooting for Mikey Garcia to win that fight because they wanted to see Pacquiao versus Mikey Garcia. If Mikey can win convincingly, if the politics can be worked out, I think that will be a fight in the summertime in Saudi Arabia.
Especially if you look at Manny Pacquiao's resume with Mexican and Mexican-American fighters. I mean, he's their huckleberry. He knows that style. And as a Mexican or a Mexican-American in myself, I look at Pacquiao, and he's a fellow Mexican because we love that type of style, man. And he has a lot of Latino fans. He has fans all over the world. But, yeah, Mexicans really appreciate Manny Pacquiao. And that'll be a pay-per-view style. That would do over a million easily.
Well, if it's on DAZN, it won't be a pay-per-view, which it probably will be. And if it's in Saudi Arabia, I don't think it's going to do that type of number either. But it's still a great fight, and one that, even if it's in the afternoon, is something everybody will be watching.
And the way you promote that fight, an 8-division world champion versus a 4-division world champion, Philippines, Mexican, American, Saudi Arabia, all of the above. Yeah, it's great.
If we have to go back to Saudi Arabia, I don't want to sit
the next best to you part on the of plane. Saudi Arabia was you being miserable.
Yes, because I couldn't sleep the entire trip. I had to take pills on Friday to get down. It wasn't, and then I got sick, and then it started raining.
I almost didn't make the fight. I almost missed the last bus because I slept 14 and a half hours.
Yeah,
because
you lied about your phone being broken. It wouldn't
I need my beauty sleep. That's why I look like this, and you look like you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Have you seen your nose lately?
Have you seen your face without makeup?
Yes.
You look like Casper.
I'm a white guy from Boston.
Put some gel in your hair.
It's a podcast, idiot. All right. Let me finish with a fight that was announced this week, officially a welterweight fight between two top-tier junior welterweights. Regis Prograis coming off the unification loss against Josh Taylor. He is getting right back into the mix against Maurice Hooker, who two fights ago...
I love this fight, man. I was hoping so bad that it was going to get made.
Maurice Hooker, two fights ago, lost in his chance to unify against Jose Ramirez. This is basically... it's kind of like the loser's bracket in the World Boxing Super Series, because you've got Taylor and Ramirez scheduled to fight each other at some point in 2020. Now you have Prograe versus Hooker, and I love two guys getting right back into the mix. I don't care that it's 143 pounds. I don't care at all that there's no belt on the line in a fight like this. These are two guys that are among the best in their respective weight classes, and they're going at it. I take it you like this fight,
too. Oh, man, I love this fight. First of all, I love Prograe, and I thought his fight with Josh Taylor was a great back and forth. I thought Taylor won convincingly, even though, you know, some people thought Prograe deserved more credit. But it was the two elite champions fighting each other at that weight division. And with Hooker, he faced another elite champion in a unification in Ramirez, and we all saw what happened. Candidate for fight of the year, if it would have lasted a little bit longer, in my opinion. But yeah, the losers bracket. Both these guys fighting. Both these guys carry themselves like champions. They are champions, and it's exactly the type of bounce back fight that you want to see after a devastating loss if you're Hooker, or after a competitive loss if you're Prograe. I can't believe the promoters actually decided to agree to do this. I can't believe the fighters agreed to do it, because usually they want a bounce back fight, especially if you're Mo Hooker. I mean, you just got
Mo Hooker had a bounce back fight. Prograe.
That's right. He did.
He had a first round win.
That makes a lot more sense. That makes a lot more sense, because you become gun shy after getting knocked out for the first time. I would never know. But yeah, you get gun shy and shell shock, and you don't have the same mentality of kill and not be killed. I mean, I don't like using that phrase, but you don't have, you know, you don't have the momentum going for you.
You get knocked out for the first time.
You get shook.
Something.
You get shell shocked. You're kind of like a war veteran. But yeah, man, for them to bounce back and want each other, this is what champions do, man. And it's a great fight. It's a great fight on paper. It's gonna be a great fight. It's just overall, and then it's promoters working together as well. So it's a win-win for everybody. I mean, that's an exceptional fight at the right
time. And look, we sat there with Mikey Garcia, and we talked to him today about Pacquiao. And one of the things he said was like, "Look, I've been waiting for Pacquiao for a long time. I can't wait forever on this guy." And Pacquiao, of course, is eyeballing maybe Floyd Mayweather and certainly other fights on that side of the street. If that fight can't be made between Mikey Garcia and Pacquiao, the winner of Prograe Hooker all of a sudden looms as a real viable opponent, especially, I think, if it's Prograe. I mean, Prograe lost by the narrowest of margins to Josh Taylor. He can fight at 140 or 147, whereas I think Hooker, he keeps saying he wants to get his belts back, but I don't think he's going to fight at 140 anymore. That 143-pound limit, Sergio.
140 killed him.
But the 143, yeah, that's all him. Like, Prograe said, "I'll fight at 140. Hooker wants 143. This is after fighting at, what, 141 the last time around? So I think he's done at 140. So if Prograe wins, he can say to Mikey Garcia, "You want to do this at 140? We can make it for, like, one of those fake-ass WBA titles that they throw around.
Hubcap
titles. Or we can, if you want to stay at 147, I'll move up, and I'm not an overwhelmingly physical guy." It is a great chance. It's a roll of the dice, but a great chance for the winner of that fight to position themselves for a big payday against the Mikey Garcia.
We've seen how he looked like a ghost, Maurice Hooker, when he was weighing in the last two fights. He struggles to make 140. I just think he outgrew the weight. He's damn near 6 foot tall. He's just one of these fighters that he doesn't belong at 140. Prograe, it does. He's shorter. He's a little bit more muscular. Yeah, I mean, he has that stature. 143, forget the belt. We don't care about the hubcaps. We don't care about what championship. They're both championship quality fighters. Let them fight. They're coming off bounce back fights. This is exactly what boxing is about, what people salivate over. They want the best fighting the best. Well, these two, Prograe and Hooker, they deserve each other. And we deserve this fight, because, I mean, for champions to bounce back and fight each other, that's what the best of boxing.
Yeah, that fight scheduled for April 17th in the D.C. area, and I think the undercard's pretty good, too. Javier Fortuna is going to fight Luke Campbell for that 135-pound title that Devin Haney had to vacate because of the surgery. So I think it's just a good card from top to bottom, headlined by two really top-tier fighters. Sergio, you never disappoint. You always say some fucking batshit crazy things.
I'm going to get you sponsorship by Dude Wipes.
I don't want to be sponsored.
Dude Wipes.
You don't need Dude Wipes. What is the matter with you?
We all gotta wipe our butt, Max.